Good morning, everyone. Let's get y'all in here rocking and rolling. We are going to be doing coaching today. It's just open coaching. Whatever you need help with. Don't forget, this is no BS, no excuses month. So I would love to coach some of you on excuses that come up often. So if you have like, it just tastes so good, a little bit won't hurt. But everybody else is. I can start tomorrow. Like, I want all of you to be thinking about the excuses you most often use and see if you need help working through those. Because almost every excuse I'm going to tell you is super overcomable. They're not that hard to get rid of. But when you don't get coached on it, when you don't raise your hand, when you don't talk about it, guess what? It's really hard to overcome because excuses are always going to feel very real. They're going to feel very true when they're in your brain, and they're not. So what we want to do, and this is one of the things that I really encourage y'all to do, is you have to take your excuses and you have to write about them. A lot of you are trying to outthink your excuses. It's kind of like, well, I just noticed that I'm always, saying, a little bit won't hurt. That's my excuse. And you're just kind of like witnessing it. Now, noticing and witnessing is super important. We have to actually know the excuses first. So, like, the first thing we have to do in order to get over excuses is you've got to know what your excuses are. And you have to know that they're different than reasons. So, for all of you, make sure you raise your hand. Ain't nobody wanting to get coached today. Everybody's so good at the weight loss that they ain't got no help that they need. I'm sure. So, Anne, you'll be first, or Amy. So, first, we do have to witness them. You have to know what your excuses are, and you have to be able to distinguish, is this an excuse or is this a reason? A reason is something super valid. So, if you were, let's say, you planned to make a chicken salad for dinner, and your kid fell and broke their arm, and you had to go to the emergency room, and you had to sit there, and there was like no food, and you're super hungry, and you need to eat. Not having the chicken salad is now not an excuse. Like, I would call that a reason. Kids aren't going to break their arm every day. You do not need to go to the ER all the time. These are infrequent occurrences and things like that. Now, on the other side, though, what ends up happening is a lot of you have what's called excuses. You're always saying the same things. Every single time, let's say, spontaneous thing pops up or whatever, you use the same excuse rather than trying to stick to your plan. So we want to make sure that we're doing what it like noticing, not only what are we saying to ourselves to get us to overeat or eat off plan, but we also want to understand what is the excuse I'm using? Is it an excuse or is it a reason? Then, once you know it, and let's say it's an excuse, y'all, I cannot tell you how helpful it is to write about it every day. Because a lot of you will say, my biggest wish is that my brain would not offer this anymore. So, right now, your brain gets rewarded every time it tries to get you to eat. I want you to think about it. Why would it stop if it got rewarded? It's no different than if you have a small child, and if every time they threw a fit, they got to stay up later, then yeah, they're going to want to throw a fit every single night because they're going to get to have fun by staying up later. They know you're going to cry. They just keep going. So we have to think about our brain works on reward loops. So if you're not like actively changing the thought, if you're not poking holes in it, and making sense as to why you're not going to listen to it, then all you're doing is like, I just keep thinking this, and then I eat, and I wonder why it's not stopping. So we want to get good at hearing it, and then we want to get good at writing about it. So I'm going to read y'all something. I put this in the Facebook group. I took a screenshot of it so I could not forget. Hang on, I got to get to. Oh, yeah, I got the new phone, and now it like pulls everything up different. So one of the nice things about running an online company is you've got to always have the latest, greatest phone because, like, I do so much work on the phone, it's unreal. So, but the only bad thing about getting a new phone is everything changes every time you get a new phone. So, somebody had posted, like, my biggest excuse is a little bit won't hurt. So I wrote a response and I want to talk about it because I want to tell y'all this is how you're going to work through things. So I said, let's look at it this way. Would you love it if I came to your house and I just made a little crack in your roof for water to seep through every time it rained? Like, how many of you would love that? Be like, yeah, like what I want is a really slow leak in my roof. I want something just really tiny. Said no one ever. You might notice the mold and the rot later when it becomes a big fucking problem, which is what, when we say a little won't hurt, they'd be like looking at your roof going, oh, that little leak up there. You know, that little bit of water that keeps coming in through the ceiling, a little bit won't hurt. You would never, like, if your brain offered you that logic, you would slap your brain in, like, inside out. You would be like, I'm fixing to eat granny style on you. That's going to hurt. We need to fix it. This is an emergency because that's going to turn into a big ass problem. And that's the conversation now we have to start having with ourselves. So when now what we want to do is we want to use the trigger of a little won't hurt to be the indicators like, oh, wait, a little does hurt. Here's exactly how it hurts. And we write about this. The more you write about it, the more often you write about what kind of pain a little bit extra causes. Now your brain has a reason to maybe not offer that thought as often. At the very least, if every time your brain wants to say it, guess what also happens? Your brain is now making a habit out of arguing with the thought. Like a lot of you are just like, I just wish that my thoughts would change. If you want your thoughts to change, you have to actively do that. This is not a practice of just like, I'm just going to think about this or whatever. What you need to do is you just need to sit there and you need to write every single day about it. So let me finish what my post was. Always remember that it's equally as true that a little bit negates progress. A little bit also adds up. So I want you to think about this. For this one excuse, it makes 100% sense that if a little bit wouldn't hurt, then a little bit also could hurt. So we have to write about all the little ways that it hurts, all the little things. And then I said, I used to teach that every little bite is about 50 calories. Now, I know we don't count calories here, but as all of us know, we are X calorie and point counters. So sometimes we want to use old diet methods that could get our brain to pay attention in a new way so that it can now see like a little bit of food, a little extra food in a whole new way. Right now it sees a little bit of food in the way of that won't hurt. And what we want to do is we want to teach our brain to see food in this way. Oh, a little bit costs this. This is what it costs me to eat a little bit. Okay, so I said, I used to teach that every little bite is about 50 calories, which is about true. It's not like we're all grabbing little bitty like nubs of carrot sticks around here. And even a nub of a carrot stick is going to run you about 10 calories. So if you just eat 5 or 6 little carrots, you're already at your 50 calories, right? So sometimes putting math to a sentence helps you. So from now on, I want you to think this about a little bit won't hurt. This is at least 50 calories. And this adds up all day long. Then what you can do is if you want to get really good about this, take every little thing that you are little bitten on, you just start tracking it before you even change it. Just get you a notepad and then you're going to like do a little tally mark, like just put down October. What is today? October the 6th. Check, check, check. Every time you eat just a little extra, thinking it won't hurt. Then for every little check, it gets 50 points or 50 calories, however you want to call it. And then that will show you how a little bit is actually adding up fast. And then what happens is now you have like a whole new way to think about it. Right now, what you are watching and creating a story around is mindless bites that have nothing around them. They don't seem bad because we're not looking for anything that could be harmful. So we want to see the other side. And so then what we want to do is we want to like have that little system. And it's like, okay, now what do I want to be thinking every time my brain thinks a little won't hurt? If on Sundays I end up eating 400 little bites of shit all day long, is it worth it? It is adding up. I feel like I'm trying so hard all day long. Like in all these moments, I'm trying so hard. And then I have these 10-second moments where I eat just a little extra that's adding up to 300 to 400 calories extra a day. I would rather be losing weight than those, like, let's say you had, five or six little, this won't hurt, this won't hurt moments. And they're all 10 seconds long. I'm willing to give up that 1 minute a day of displeasure, of wanting to eat something and not eating it, to make sure that the other work that I'm doing is actually paying off. And this is important for all of you. The reason why I want you journaling on this is because I taught this recently at our camp. The best way, one of the fastest ways to get your brain to change things is to make what you're doing painful. Raise the stakes. It's not always about trying to come up with better thoughts that feel good. Sometimes what we need to do is we need to turn the temperature up on a behavior that we're doing, not in a way that we shame ourselves. I'm not talking about like, well, you're a fucking failure because you keep doing this. That's like beating yourself up. What I'm talking about is when you journal on your most common excuses, like a little won't hurt. And every single day you write about, here's the way it's hurting. I wake up with regrets the next day. When I weigh in on the scale each week, I notice that I feel like I'm working really hard, but I'm not getting the payoff I think I should. I think like I'm noticing that now that I'm tracking the little bits won't hurt, I can see how much extra food that ends up being every single day. And so we start like showing our brain, like, here's the facts of eating a little extra. So really what we have here is we have the fact is eat a little extra. The thought is a little won't hurt. And we want the thought now to be all of this adds up. And here's how it adds up. And this is why it feels like shit. And this is what it's doing to me. When we just say like a little won't hurt, you know what we do? We eat and we turn our brain off. We don't think about anything after that. So that is what I want y'all doing. So I think some of you were asking, like, I don't know which thread it is. If you go in there, I tagged it hashtag Corinne's advice. So if you will just go and you will look in the Facebook group, the main Facebook group, search hashtag Corinne's advice, you will see you'll see all my posts where I do Corinne's advice, but you'll see that one is one of the latest ones. Cynthia is asking, I eat without hunger and I do it before I even hear the excuse. How can I turn up the volume of my excuse that I don't even notice? And you probably don't have an excuse, Cynthia. You have what we call a mindless eat. Or so when we let's start with mindless. There are three types of overeating that everybody does: mindless, habit, and emotional. Mindless eating is about 10 to 15% of the current weight all of you are carrying around. That's why we want to get rid of like bites, licks, and tastes and little things like that. Habit eating is like cleaning your plate, eating on time simply because you always have, and you're not really thinking about if you're hungry. That does not include my shift workers. If you are a shift worker who, or you, maybe you take certain meds or something, you need to eat at a certain time. That's very different. That's not a habit eat. I'm talking about people who just never question it 1 ounce. Like they're just eating out of habit. Like you always serve yourself the same amounts. If you go out to eat, you eat what's served. You don't think about it. That's a habit eat. So one of the things that you want to do is you want to figure out, it's probably, if I had to guess, Cynthia, it's in the mindless realm. And so if it's in the mindless realm, now you want to just go back and you want to think like, what are the common foods? What are the common situations? What are the things that are happening where I kind of get into action. And now I need to create what we call environmental speed bumps. So an environmental speed bump is things like this. If like for a long time, we couldn't keep a can of nuts in the house. If there was a can of nuts, I always would go grab the nuts, and I got to where I could hear the excuse, but in the very beginning, I wasn't even hearing the excuse. I would just go get the nuts and be like, oh, I'm hungry. I'm just going to have a few. And I'd sit down on the couch and I would just start eating. And once something's in motion, it's harder to get it to stop. Next thing I would know, I'd eat like a half a can of nuts. And I'd be like, oh shit, I didn't mean to eat that much. I was actually hungry. But what I did for myself is I was like, all right, when I come home from the grocery store from now on, I am going to take the nuts out, grab the mini bags, get me a quarter cup measuring cup. And I just made a bunch of, I would just portion out the whole can so that I always had a stopgap. So now when I would go in there, I wasn't going to be grabbing a can because the can was gone. So I'd be grabbing a bag and going and sitting down, eating my nuts. And I would tell myself, now when you eat your nuts, if you need more, you go get another bag. But my kind of my rule for myself was eat a bag of nuts, drink some water, give yourself a good 20 minutes, then reevaluate if you need more food. Because like, especially when it comes to like nuts or peanut butter or things like that, one of the things that ends up happening is the higher the fat food is, the smaller it is. Well, you're actually getting denser calories in that, but because you're not going to get the quantity effect. Like it's just easier to overeat those or eat too much of it. And then notice like 30 minutes later, you're like, whoa, because now all of a sudden it's sitting in your belly like a fucking rock. So I just, all I did was I got really smart about looking at a lot of the foods that I kept around the house. And I made a lot of environmental stopgaps. Like if we had chips, I portioned chips into bags. I just like if we had peanut butter, like for a long time, I couldn't keep like a jar of peanut butter in the house. Like it was one of those things where I always overate it. It was partly habit, partly emotional. It just had and mindless. It was like the trifecta. And it stemmed from years when I did bodybuilding competitions. And when I did my bodybuilding competitions, worst diets ever, very unhealthy. It set like I didn't even lose my weight this way. But once I started doing bodybuilding competitions, we did a lot of like basically it's like keto. And I mean, awful. I mean, and at some points we were just doing high protein and vegetables, no carbs, no fats. It's so not sustainable, so not good for you. And it sends your body into trauma. And I did that for like 4 years when I was in my like, I guess it was like 3 years after I'd lost my weight, I got into bodybuilding and I would do all these phases. And I'm just telling you this to be honest, while I was doing it, it really fucked my head up around food because this is why I teach. We really have to be mindful about not creating trauma responses in our body around food. And so, like for me, when you're removing carbohydrates and you're removing fats, one or both, the body doesn't like that. And so now what it will do is it will do extreme cravings, extreme things, just trying to get you to get enough calories. And it wants you to have all of the macros. So the macros are protein, fats, and carbs. And so anyway, peanut butter is like notorious in the bodybuilding world as being a binge food because kind of healthy, so you can justify it. It's got good fat in it. And then a lot of times, if they're ever going to give you fat, they will give you peanut butter because when you are never eating carbs and all you're eating is fish and broccoli all the time, peanut butter is going to like taste like opening a bag of sugar and just pouring it down your throat. I mean, that's how desensitized you get. And so I would just, it would always never fail on a Wednesday. Like I always had to do weigh-ins on Fridays. And so Friday, I would work so hard, work so hard, work so hard. And then by Wednesday, though, it was like the peanut butter jar would dance across the room and say, please eat me. And my brain would scream. And I would just sit there and I would eat peanut butter until I was almost sick, literally sick. So I kept having to give it back to my husband and say, like, take it. I can't even have it in the house. I tell my coach, don't put peanut butter on my plan. It's the one thing that I can't, follow the rules around and blah, blah, blah. And now that I've looked back on it, I was literally having a trauma response. Like, my body was starving. It was missing vital nutrients. And when your body is not getting what it needs, it's going to demand to get food in any way that it can. Any way that it can. So I used to order peanut butter from Amazon. Once I finally got to where I was like, all right, I'm done competing. But I had built such a habit response to peanut butter that when I ate it, like, I only wanted to eat it spoon after spoon after spoon after spoon. So I had to buy it in individual packets like you would get at a hotel. And I did that for like 3 years. It took me a long time. And then I tried putting peanut butter back in the house. And I would make sure that, like, we kept it way high up on a shelf. And then when I would get it, I would prepare myself. I'd be like, okay, we're going to make peanut butter toast. We do not need to eat out of the jar. Like, I would literally talk myself through it. And then when it was time to have the peanut butter, I would be in a good nervous system state to where I could make the decision and I would want to still eat it. But I had prepared myself with all the reasons why eating peanut butter like that no longer was what I wanted to do. That here's the problems it was causing, all kinds of stuff. And then it, like, now we have multiple jars of peanut butter in this house. I have peanut butter toast every morning. And I take my knife and I get one little swipe and I put it on my toast and I'm done. And I don't even think about that peanut butter anymore. And I mean, for years, my brain was like, a little won't hurt. You've been so good. Let's that was my thoughts that I would have. You've been so good. You've worked so hard. And so I had to work on that. All right. Let's go with Amy. Also, y'all, I have like a new treat I'll tell you about after Amy. Don't let me forget that is really good that I saw on Instagram this morning and I just tried it and I'm like, oh shit, I think I'm replacing my coffee with this. All right, Amy, what do you want coaching on?
Well, you kind of addressed some of it,
Okay.
which is
Good.
exciting. But I've been here since early 2020, and I've put 15 pounds on, and I'm trying to really focus on that. And I have my data for the last month, and I have been trying to focus on an action plan, because I'm making great plans every week and I'm not following through on what I really want to do with it.
Okay. How do you know you're making great plans?
Well, I am actually like identifying the days I'm going to focus on enough at dinner. I am, writing out that the my actual planning feels very comfortable. They're very doable. I have foods. I don't eat that bad. I eat pretty healthy. I found for a while I was depriving myself of a treat, and I was calling it a treat. I now, if I want ice cream, it goes on my plan. So I feel like I'm doing well with those kinds of things.
Okay.
My brain likes to do it all and to look for the shiny new thing, and I'm not doing enough. And I think what happens is it turns out that I'm not being consistent on anything. So I'm good with it for a week and then I'm looking for something new. And so I'm really trying to find some focus on, like, what can I do for a month and really just stay with that and keep it simple so that it is a level up and I'm not just spiraling trying to do all these other things.
Well, how do you know though it's too much?
I don't know that it's too much, I guess. I feel like I could do more than one thing at a time. At this point, I mean, I do feel like I can do that.
Okay.
But I feel like I'm just not focusing because I have more than one thing to focus. I don't know. I just feel
Well,
like
to me, you sound very focused. I don't know why you, like, I'm trying to figure out why you feel like you're not focused.
because I'm not being consistent with it.
Okay, that doesn't mean, so this is a really good thing. You're focused, you're just not consistent yet.
Okay.
Like just because you're focused doesn't mean consistency comes along for the ride.
Okay.
You know, like, I mean, I could focus right now on trying to become an NBA player, you know, and get very focused and probably not get there, you know.
Right.
So like, what do you think consistency means?
Consistency means just getting into a pattern and doing it on a
Like
regular
what? Like
basis.
tell me like one behavior, like you're just like, all
Okay,
right.
so my one behavior is stopping at enough at dinner.
Okay. And so we're gonna stop at enough at dinner for the month of October, right? Okay. And what does it mean when you say at the end of the month, I would know I was consistent because, and what would you tell me?
Because my percentage of stopping it enough would go up. So right now,
Like what would it go from to what?
I am, that's what I'm looking for, is where that was. I'm at 50%.
Okay, so we're 50% of the time stopping at enough. And then, so if you were consistent in October, what do you think your number would be at the end of the month?
If I was consistent, I would hope to be more at 60, 65%.
Okay, so that's good to know. So I know you're not looking for perfection. Okay. So let me ask you this. In order to get a, and let me just say this for everybody. The reason why I ask for those questions, because some people would say, well, then I would be at 100% by the end of the month. Because if I was consistent with stopping at enough, I would be doing it every night. Okay. In order for you to go from 50 to 65%, so we just need a 15% change this month. How many extra nights do you have to stop at enough?
I think I could do it with one to two.
Well, do the math real quick.
I can't. I'm not
Well, we've got 30
a math.
days,
30
right?
days
So
at
if you
10%.
stopped at enough 15 days, that's 50%.
Okay.
Okay, so 15 times in September, you must have stopped at enough at dinner. Okay, so this month, we're basically targeting. I don't know. Somebody do the math.
That's my son's job. I'm not a math girl.
Hang on. I think the way you do it is 45. No, it can't be 45 days. There's not that many days in the month, Pam. We've got 31 days times 65. It would be like having 19 days. We need one more day a week that you stop it enough. Okay. Now, here's how I would tackle. How does that sound to you when I say like we're gonna go from basically what did we say 15 days? We need to add one more day a week. How does that sound to you?
That's very doable.
Okay. Which day, like when you look at your data, did you look to see what are your Achilles heels days? Do you
I
have like
do.
certain days?
It's all Wednesdays and all Saturdays. I mean,
Okay, so
or that's
Wednesdays
a
and
lot of them.
Saturdays. So this month, then what we really want to do, if we want to get focused and consistent, which day do we want to pick at dinner stopping at enough? Wednesdays or Saturdays?
Wednesday.
Why Wednesday?
Because my husband isn't home. That's his golf night, or he goes out, and it gives me time to focus on me and do it around my hunger and make it. I can
So
focus on
why
me.
have these last Wednesdays you not done that?
I think it's just I do a lot of fuck it eating on those days.
Why do you do that?
Because I'm by myself.
No, that's not why we do it. I'm by myself right now. Well, look, you're only with me. You're technically by yourself right now. Why are you just not fuck it eating right now?
I'm
Well, tell me, there's a reason why you're not.
Because I'm not hungry. I mean, I know that I don't do it all the time. So it's a fact that I don't consistently fuck it eat. But I think that when I'm by myself, I know the thoughts come up.
Okay, that's why I'm asking you because in one breath you told me doing it on Wednesday would be easier, and then in another breath you're telling me Wednesday is your really hard day because you're by yourself. Which is it? Because we
It's
got to
my heart.
prepare for it.
It's a hard day.
Okay, why is it a hard day?
Because I think everything, I don't know why I'm doing this.
It's okay.
I think I hold stuff in, and then all of a sudden, when I'm by myself, I have time to hear everything. And I let the thoughts just kind of go wild on me.
Okay,
I'm
what are
by
you
myself
holding?
right now too, because he's out of town. And I know, like yesterday, I binged last night. Like I haven't binged in a really long time. And when I journaled on it this morning, it's like my brain is just spinning like crazy, and I just couldn't calm it down. And so I think that when I'm by myself, those things are starting to happen.
Okay, what are you holding in is my question.
Last night I was calling it PTSD, and I think that I have to stop doing that because I don't think that's what it is. I have a relationship issue with my oldest son's wife. And I think I'm doing really well with that. And then all of a sudden it pops back up. But yesterday, I just happened to run into somebody who knew my younger son's girlfriend's father, kind of thing. And I was afraid that I even said too much talking to them. And I didn't. When I went back and looked at it, it was all facts. I discussed it with my son. It's like I shouldn't have any issues with it. But I was really afraid that I was like sabotaging a relationship with them too. And so I think that I think I'm dealing with it, and I am. I mean, like I really I have come a long way in working through the other daughter-in-law, but I think that there's just still things I like blame myself for, and it just when it gets quiet, I have time for that guilt.
Okay, so this is why I wanted to ask all these questions because you came on here with the problem is I don't stop it enough at dinner.
Yeah.
I don't think that's the big problem in your life. I think that you are not stopping it enough. I think the big problem is you have a lot of unresolved things going on in your head. And on the quiet days, we got to be prepared for all of it to come up, so, which means on the non-quiet days, we need to be working on that stuff.
Okay.
Because I will tell you, and I will tell everyone listening on this call, your brain right now, especially when it comes to like a relationship that is dear to you, and it sounds like you've lost it or there's something going on there, right? That is very traumatic for a human, especially if it's around a child. You know, like some relationships, I could give a shit if we've got like issues. Like I've got a couple of friends, I'm like, I like you, but you know, if I don't know, shit goes down, I'm like, well, we had a good run. You know, now if I had the same thing happening with Logan, I would not be in the like, well, we had a good run, you know. So our brains treat like relationships coming to an end or fearful that they're at an end or whatever's happening there, they treat them very dramatically and traumatically. And so, anytime you're getting a whiff of thinking that you could be causing problems like that, your brain is going to freak out and it's going to go to worst case scenario. And oh, like just like what happened with you, I'm overanalyzing everything and I'm catastrophizing and I'm worrying and I'm doing all these things. And what we need to do is not worry about how we're going to stop enough at a dinner. We need to learn how to, like, how do I soothe myself? How do I ground myself? Like, how do I get my nerves under control and stuff? Because that's what I need to be focusing on. Because right now, the only way that you are soothing your nervous system and the way you're grounding yourself is by binging and eating. And that is not a bad thing. Like, I explained this at camp, but did you come to camp by chance?
I didn't.
Okay. The one thing that one of the big things that I talked about, especially at Diet Detox, is when you were born, you are like, what is the first thing they do with a baby after when they're crying?
I feed you.
They give it food. They either go on a nipple or a bottle almost immediately because it's grounding, because they're in shock. It's traumatic. I mean, can you imagine? You've been in a basically a bubble wrap of water that's warm and all your needs are being taken care of. And all of a sudden it's bright, loud, and you're fucking cold. It's like, what happened to me? And I'm trying to use my organs now. Like, you know.
Right.
And so they give it food because it immediately calms babies down. So we learn from an early age that if our nervous system is getting triggered, that food will always be there. And it does because there's several reasons why this happens. One, like the eating is rhythmic. So one of the things that is like really beneficial for people who binge eat and stuff is to find like when you get really activated and triggered, it's like not trying to outthink things first. It's like noticing like these are the emotions that get me. Like my body will feel this way. I'll hear myself thinking this way. Like I know what my agitated state is like. And then what we want to do is we want to have like certain behaviors that we can do that can calm our nervous system down so that we can think again. Because when you are triggered and activated, like if your brain is thinking somehow you are, you know, I've already, you know, got this one relationship that's in danger. I don't want this happening with my other child. Your brain freaks out. And it's looking to be soothed and consoled and grounded. I think you did some really good things for yourself by like, let me call my son. Let me just talk about this. Let me get rational about this. But then also giving yourself credit in the moment of like, this is me calming my nervous system down. This is me, like, this is me working on this. It could help with binges, but you want to kind of come up with ways that, like a lot of binge eaters need rhythmic things that they can do because eating gets into a rhythm and that's why it soothes. So if you can get to where like a lot of people, weighted blankets, like laying under something heavy sometimes can be very soothing for an overactive nervous system. Petting yourself. Like, I don't know if y'all ever noticed, but like a lot of times when I'm on stage, if I'm getting nervous, like I don't know what to say or something, you'll see me suddenly doing things like this. I'm just calming myself down because I know it works.
Yeah, I've actually coached with Kathy on it a little bit, and I found I hold my hands, and I do a little pattern in my hands with my thumb. So I've learned to do that. And actually, that the binge last night is really not typical anymore. I haven't really done that in a long time, but I don't think I did not take the time to stop and realize I was even doing anything to calm myself down. So that's a good point to be aware of.
Yeah. And then, so what I would do in terms of like for this month, like getting, like I would really focus in. I think the problem, I want you to reorient. I don't think your problem is that you're stopping it, not stopping at enough 50% of the time. I think the problem is on Friday or on Wednesdays and Saturdays, you have some kind of unresolved needs. And we need to solve those. Otherwise, what ends up happening is, you're going to just keep trying to take the food away. Like, I need to be good. I need to like stop it enough and stuff while I feel like absolute shit. So it's like we're working on the wrong thing. It's like I'm trying to take away the one thing I know that can help me not feel like shit and then wonder why I'm struggling. And when the answer is, I need to work more on why I'm feeling like shit on these days. Like, what can I be doing to help plug those holes, to reassure myself, to remind myself of my nervous system, things that I can do? But it's like, you know, if it's this, if you've got a relationship issue that's at the heart of it, you probably need coaching on this relationship with the daughter-in-law, like the actual impetus, whatever's happening there, we got to work on that because it sounds like it's like, I want you to think about the problem even. When you had the conversation, the problem's not even the conversation. The problem isn't it isn't even your catastrophizing and your worrying. That was all a result of probably this one thing that's got you hypervigilant. And so now it's getting you to be hypervigilant all the time, looking for reasons of ways that you fuck up. And if you're real busy most of the time, or you have a distraction, well, you're not thinking about it. But your brain doesn't mean your brain's not cataloging it. And so then when it gets quiet, I want all of you to think about this. In the quiet is the hardest part for most of us. Because if you don't have a good relationship with yourself and everything's quiet, then you're only going to be hearing the terrible relationship with yourself. That is why so many of us eat. That's why a lot of us can lose weight like a baller during busy periods of our lives. It's like, I'm hyper busy. So I'm totally distracted from a shitty relationship with myself. That means I can just nail my diet. Like I can lose weight. And they have a harder time losing weight when things are not busy. It's like, oh shit. Why is it during the non-busy times of my life I have the hardest time with my weight? And it's usually because of the relationship you have with yourself. And like even like with the one with your daughter or daughter-in-law, it's not so much what's going on between the two of you that I want you working on. It's what's going on between you and you because of that. What are you making all of that mean about you? How are you being like mean to yourself, or how are you being supportive? We want to be thinking about like if that's traumatic and like upsetting and stuff, this is the one time that's so important that you are really there for yourself and understanding and compassionate. And I think you figure that out. I think you will see a natural like uptick in how like it'll just get easier to stay on your plan because you're fundamentally doing the right things. Like everything you told me, I'm just like check, check, check. And whenever I can see somebody like I've got data and I've got this and I've got whatever, I always know it comes back to there is a systemic problem. So let's work on that. Take it to ask coaches. You don't have a private coach, right?
No.
Okay. One of two things. You could always get a private coach to work on stuff like this. This is what they're really good at. Like, we're gonna tackle this one thing. The other thing I would suggest, though, if you don't have the funds to do that, what you can do is you can take the relationships course, and you can do it. Do the relationships course twice. First, I want you to do it on the daughter-in-law, like the person you're having the most difficult relationship with. Sounds like that's where a lot of your shit's coming from. Then either do the relationships course again on you, where you're the topic now, or you can just do relationships on her. And then in December, we're doing the self-love course. I think we're doing self-love in December, if I'm not mistaken. And then you could just do self-love in December with all of us. Okay.
Yeah, no, that gives me some focus. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you, Amy.
Thank you.
Laura, if anybody else is going to want coaching, will you make sure you raise your hand? So let me tell y'all about my treat. So I'm on Instagram this morning. Basically, y'all, I'm not even joking. UT ended up losing yesterday. We should have won. Like, we just couldn't get our shit together. Arkansas played an amazing game. High props to Arkansas. Y'all know how I feel about my Vols. I did not sleep hardly at all last night. Like so bad that this morning my Oura Ring had tanked me all the way to a 61. And normally I have to be in Vegas up all night and had drinks to get to a 61. All I did was watch a football game in my bed and then I tanked to a 61. So I'm like scrolling mindlessly at Instagram trying to get myself up. And I saw some kind of a drink where you take a Diet Coke and you take one of those Core Power protein vanilla shakes and you mix them and it turns into like a Coke float. And I've been trying to get off coffee because it upsets my stomach. And so I thought, I'm gonna try that this morning. All I have is Diet Dr. Pepper. It is delicious. I am doing that instead of coffee from now on. Like, I think I have found my magic elixir because I can get my caffeine. I can get my protein first thing in the morning and I have my little peanut butter toast with it. And I'm just like, this is what we're having. Like, I am down. All right, Laura, what you need?
Hi.
Hi.
Hi. I've coached with you in the past, Queen's Club, I think. And the issue I'm having right now is about journaling. I have been really resistant to journaling. I even spent the time and the money to go to journaling camp virtual.
Why do you think you're resistant to it?
There's some childhood little issues around food in our
Okay.
family.
And what's
And,
going to happen if you find them?
well, they're popping up anyway. They're just not on paper.
Well, that's good to know.
Yeah.
So, what
One
would
of them,
make
I.
journaling about them worse, though, since they're popping up anyway?
Nothing.
Well, something, or
It's
you'd
just.
be journaling.
I'm just now refocusing back on using this tools of your program, like the planner. My accountability partners and I were just sharing our plans on Messenger chat,
Okay.
and I had, it was okay, but I had gone through and used the planner several months ago, and then I stopped and started using the quick version on Messenger chat between us.
Okay.
I have two partners, and I thought this isn't really doing it for me anymore.
Okay.
So I printed out a 60-day journal, got it all fixed up, and started doing my plan.
Okay.
And I felt really good about that.
Okay.
And journaling is the next piece I need to tackle.
Why not just start it? Because if you are telling me
Yeah.
I don't really have any negative thoughts about journaling, is it just a matter you just need to do it now?
Yeah. Get myself to do it. I had real high hopes of joining Coach Ashley's 365-day journaling group. And I even got the 12-week journal from camp. And all I did was predate each day.
Okay.
And that was December of 2023.
Okay, that's fine.
And
Like, I mean,
yeah.
that doesn't really tell us anything about why. Like, you kind of keep going and telling me all the things that you've done in the past, but I don't know if you have the same thoughts you had in the past. Like, I need to figure
No,
out what
there's.
is your thoughts right now about journaling, because it doesn't matter how many times you started and stopped. It really doesn't. I know that
Oh,
we
okay.
all want that to matter, but I will tell every one of you, it never matters. So I want you to think about when they created the first iPhone version one. They had never, no, I mean, like if you'd asked us in 90, 1990 and said, like, I'm just telling you, one day, all of your music, the internet, all of these amazing things will be in this handheld device. People will actually get a bad neck from using them so much. We'd been like, oh no, that's never been done before. Like, we always talk about stuff as if it's never been done before. It's like, yeah, that's kind of how it works. Until you make a breakthrough, you can't do it until that moment. So we just need to look for the breakthrough. But a lot of y'all want to do is like, I want to look at my past and keep telling myself all the reasons why it's going to be hard, instead of like, what is it going to take to get to doing it? That's all we need to know. So, like, for you, that's what I'm trying to figure out. It's like your current thoughts about journaling. So, the first thing was you said, well, I've got childhood issues around food. And when I said, okay, and you were just like, but they're showing up anyway. So, why not journal? You couldn't even give me a reason why not to journal on them. So, can you give me any reason? Like, and I'm not looking like I don't want you to think of this. I want you to think, like, what is my bullshit brain telling me about journaling other than my past? What is it telling me about journaling and starting today?
I think my brain is telling me it's going to be painful to
Okay.
dredge up these memories.
Okay. It's going to be painful. How do you know it's going to be painful?
Just thinking about them is painful.
Okay. So currently, when you think about them, it's painful. And then
Yeah.
But you are thinking about them currently, correct?
Yeah.
Okay. And then what, when they're painful, what do you end up doing?
Push it down again.
And what does pushing down look like to you?
Ignoring him or ignoring them for a while.
Like, how do you ignore them though? Like, how, like, if they keep popping up, how do you get them to not be on the forefront?
I just start doing something else.
Like,
Scroll my phone, look at Instagram, anything besides actually getting down and writing about them.
okay, so that's not a problem.
It
So
feels
why
like a
do you think?
problem to me.
Not if you're just scrolling Instagram and stuff. If it's not, like, what is the bad consequence of just saying, like, all right, sometimes I have painful childhood memories about food, and then I grab my phone and scroll Instagram for a while. Tell me the negative consequence that you think is happening from that.
I'm not actually dealing with it. I mean, I can give you two examples
Okay.
of crap. When I was young, I would say 8, 7, 8, 9 in there. We have 5 kids in our family, and we lived in New Jersey, and we had a kitchen table and a dining room table. And we all sat together, all 7 of us, at the dining room table. And if my mom had served mashed potatoes or lima beans, I refused to eat it. And the rule was, take your plate, go in the kitchen, and I was ostracized until I ate those two foods. And I just sat there. I didn't care if they were done, if the dishes were done, if everybody went downstairs to hang out. I was adamant I was not going to touch those foods.
Okay.
And then I don't know how it was resolved. I guess my mom scraped it and threw it in the trash.
So
It
why is
was
that
like,
painful now? Like, when you told me
because
that story, it didn't seem painful. So what is it about that that you're like, if I was to journal and talk about this even more, here's the pain I'm gonna like unveil.
it was painful to be having to be separated from the family. And they would go on and, I'd hear them laughing, and I was excluded. And that feeling of exclusion really hurt.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure it did. That's like, I agree 100%. Like, as a child, that had to be painful and you definitely felt excluded. But my question, though, is Laura today, who doesn't want to journal and who thinks these memories are painful, where's the pain?
Well,
Like, what do you think's What do you think is gonna, like, go ahead. What were we gonna say?
now I'm 66. My parents are dead.
Yeah.
I'm living, 1,200 miles away from two siblings, three siblings,
Yeah.
and 3,000 miles away from the other one.
Yeah.
So all the witnesses, I'm not near them now. I'm happily married,
Right. So
mom of
that's
three,
why I'm
and
asking you. That's all great. I mean,
yeah.
like, basically,
I can't figure it out.
what if it's not going to be as painful as you think?
Just get it out, write it down, and deal with it.
Well, you kind of like what, well, what would dealing, like, let's just go in on this one, lima bean incident. Okay, let's deal with it. What does dealing with this mean to you? Because you've talked about
Probably
it, you've told us about it, you told us how you felt as a child.
just forgiving my parents
Okay, do you want to
for,
forgive them?
yeah, I mean, they both had died in not a great way, painful, drawn out, and I never really brought it up because They don't remember. They didn't remember. And one's been gone for 10 years, one's been gone for eight.
Yeah, and like most things like this, we never, most people never bring up things like this with their parents anyway.
They
Because
wouldn't
once,
remember.
not only would they not remember, but this is the way I always like to look at it. And this is a question I'll ask you is why do you think, like, I want you to get out of Laura's mind. Like, we're not going to be in 7 to 9 year old Laura experienced this through her brain. And her brain is like, they've ostracized me. They're all having a good time without me. And she made it mean something. What did she make it mean?
That
They
I was
don't want
bad.
that either I'm bad or anything else.
I should buckle down and conform. Just eat the food that was put in front of me.
Think 7 to 9 year old Laura ever thought that, or she would have ate the food in front of her. She was
Well, I
never
guess
thinking that. I think
that's
that's adult
66-year-old
Yeah, I
looking
think,
back.
yes, you're thinking you should have just conformed, you should have just whatever. I don't think little Laura did anything wrong. I think she was exercising her freedom. She's like, I don't like that stuff. And if y'all are going to go down there and have a good time, I'm sitting right here. I live by my terms. That's what I
I
do.
was pretty defiant.
Yeah. Which is like a strong streak in you. So I don't think there was anything that, but what ends up happening though, when we're little, like if we were to do inner child work, we would go back and we'd probably talk to her. And if you ask little Laura, when everybody's downstairs having a good time and you're sitting here with cold mashed potatoes and lima beans, and you're feeling ostracized. Like, what's going on for you? What are you making all of this mean? And it usually comes out in two ways. I'm making this mean that I am something and they something. So sometimes it's like, they don't love me. They don't care about me. They're too hard on me, like whatever that is. And then on the other side is, I must be bad. There must be something wrong with me. I'm not like everybody else. We just kind of want to figure out a little bit about what little Laura made all of that mean.
Well, something you just said kind of rang true. I'm not like everybody else in the family. I'm different. Not good enough.
Okay.
I got stuck between two brothers and had two older sisters that were 5 and 7 years older. So I was always like the little pest.
Okay. So that's good to know that the little version of you made your parent who wanted you to eat lima beans and mashed potatoes. She was making it mean I'm not like everybody else, which means I'm not good enough. Now, what we want to do is we want to get out of her head for just a second. And I want you to get into your parents' head back in the day. Why do you think they wanted you to eat the mashed potatoes and lima beans?
Well, I think it's because they stretched the money to feed us all. And I was ungrateful. And that's all that was going to be served that night. I wasn't going to be able to have a bowl of cereal afterwards. That would have been a reward.
Right, but I want you to think you just slammed little Laura. Was little Laura being ungrateful for mashed potatoes and lima beans, or was little Laura, she just didn't like them?
She didn't like them, but I thought you meant from my parents' point of view.
Right. So let me ask you this. Do you think they thought you were actually ungrateful, or do you think they were trying to stretch the money and hoping that if they got you eating that food, that worrying about money would be a little easier on them?
Yeah, that could be. That could be. I used to go grocery shopping with my mom. She would take me and leave the other kids at home. And I would watch her buy a pound of hamburger, and she would stretch that to feed five kids. She was a teacher, and my dad was a salesman.
Okay.
So they worked really hard.
Yeah. So you had hardworking parents who probably had a lot of money pressures, a lot of mouths to feed, and they were just trying to figure out like potatoes and beans are cheap.
Yeah.
Laura really needs to start liking these beans because that's all we got.
Yeah, I'm sure that was it. Thank you. That was it.
So how do you feel now about it? Now, just now that we've talked about it, like how are you feeling?
I could take a deep breath and relax about it.
Huh. So not in pain.
No.
All right. So we don't have to worry about it. It's going to be painful.
Could journal that shit.
Yeah. Like I will just tell all of you, like it is very rare that I journal and have what I would call a deeply painful thing. I mean, I can't even think of a time that I've journaled where I was just like, oh my God, I never knew this. This is a rupture in my soul. I just don't know if I could heal it. Like most
Well,
of you, go ahead.
I just thought of something. It did cause pain because I ballooned up to 245 pounds
The journal
during my
or the not journal or the not reconciling things.
not reconciling it, and it kind of compounded, and I can remember my dad. I was scraping my plate to get a clean plate, to get everything on the plate. And I sat next to him, and this is in California. And he took my hand and put it down. And in front of the whole table, he said, "Why are you doing that? Don't you realize you're as big as a house?" And it was like, shit, that was more painful than the lima bean incident. I was humiliated.
Yeah.
And this is at a holiday. So we had extra people at the table. And he finally came around in the next couple of years and wrote me an apology letter,
So
which
he's
I
your
cherish. And I thought, well, he doesn't know any better.
Yeah. Well,
He doesn't have any tact.
and I think also like one thing is your dad like writing an apology letter is also journaling. And what you think about like when he wrote that letter, it's because something's been bothering him. He'd probably been thinking about it for a long time, and he finally decided to write about it and hand it to you. He just handed his thoughts to you on paper, and I'm inviting you to start handing you your thoughts on paper. And sometimes that's going to be like taking stories, like we just did with lima beans, even taking the story of your dad and working
I
through it
think
on
my
paper.
mom probably told him to do it. I
Well,
can
at
see
least he
her doing
listens.
it. He did.
Yeah.
He listened to her.
Yeah. She got through to him. Don't matter if somebody told you to, I mean, I'm telling you to journal. Maybe I'm getting through to you.
Yeah, I think you are.
But one of the things is like for all of you, I think we have all, I will just say this and then we'll go on to the next person, but I want to say this for you is all of us have been told some shitty things by our parents throughout the years. Sometimes when we're smaller, even sometimes when we're older. I was just telling the campers about Logan had called my grandmother in Alabama. I got one living grandmother left, and this is my dad's mother. And she's, I mean, big time dot mentality. I mean, this woman's like 85 on a walker, and she's still like worried about what she weighs and is always looking for a diet and all this other stuff. She always asks me, what do I think about Weight Watchers? I'm just like, Like I've said the last time, not much. It's a competitor of mine.
I
But
remember
she,
that story. I went to virtual camp.
yes. So when Logan called her this time, the one of the first questions she asked was, "Has your mother gained her weight back?" Like, I've had my weight off for over 15 years, but that's the one thing, like, it just consumes her. And so the way I like to look at it, that I find is helpful, is back in the day, weight was a very heavy topic. If you were overweight, you probably were not going to get married, and for a
Exactly.
woman. And if you were a woman who wasn't going to get married, like in the 70s, that's when we first got checking accounts where we could like open a credit card if we wanted one. Like, for a long time, being married for generations, your body was the passport to being able to have a good life. Otherwise, you were likely to, not have a good paying job, not be able to have things, not do well, all those kinds of things. So for a long time, a woman's body, when it came to like weight and stuff, was almost like a life or death situation. So a lot of our mothers and fathers for generations were very hard on women's bodies, not because they were like ashamed of you for being fat. It really came from in an internalized sense of, if you don't get married, you're going to be in harm's way. And so a lot of that came out of like, well, let me scare you to death. Let me just say, you're so overweight. You're like, I remember my mom. I mean, this was in the 80s. And I remember my mom saying, "You got big legs like your Aunt Becky. And if you don't stop, if you don't," I remember one time she told my grandmother, "If you don't quit feeding her all this food, she's going to be big as a house. And she'll never find a man." I was probably like 10. Now, I love my mother to death to this day. And I know my mother back then. First of all, my mother was real young. So in her mind, who was divorced by 21 with two babies, trying to raise them in the 70s and 80s with a G, like basically a shitty high school diploma. That was a big deal to her. She was not trying to hurt my feelings. She was not fat shaming me. She was legit worried that I would have the same life she was going to have. And it was a hard one. And so, a lot of times, what I like to do for all of you is I like for y'all to journal on, I'm going to eavesdrop into my parents' brain, not mine. Not the one that's hurt, not the one that's all the things. And I just want to see for my own sake, is there a reasonable explanation as to why things were done the way they were? Because the way I thought about them as a child is very skewed very often. Because we're like, little Laura is supposed to feel ostracized. She is supposed to feel like, I'm not like everybody else. Everybody else seems to be able to eat the food but me. I must not be good enough. That is the normal conclusion. But 66-year-old Laura can go back and can console her and say, "Honey, there was never anything wrong with you. And I know that's why you felt that way. But there was never anything wrong with you. You were always good enough. You were always loved. It just wasn't expressed the way that you needed it." Like in this situation, it sounds like your parents loved you.
Oh, yeah.
And then what we can do is we can go back, we can heal some of that stuff through journaling. And then what we can do is we can tell ourselves now, it's like, now I can have a different relationship with food because, my parents never meant probably half the stuff that I've always thought they did. Like if I eavesdropped into their brain and I wrote about from their perspective, I might just get like a whole new way to look at all of this. So like it's okay for little Laura to be hurt, but it's also okay to have understanding, curiosity, and compassion about why things happened the way they did too. And then that will give you that sense of peace that you were feeling like, I can breathe about this now. And there's no telling how many other things that you're probably not dealing with, that are causing you to live in like borderline anxiety, borderline pain, for fear that you will be hurt. And it's like, and this just makes so much sense. And I'm like, I'm wondering how many other things might be like that when you start journaling.
Okay. Thank you. I appreciate your time.
Okay, thank you.
Okay.
I want to say to all of you, when it comes to journaling, I don't want y'all worrying that you're going to somehow accidentally go so deep that it's going to be disruptive to your life. Here's what I know happens with journaling. If your brain is scared of certain topics, you'll start writing about it and you'll start getting scared. Your brain would probably stop you before it would ever let you go. Like, I don't even, I can't even imagine y'all going down some kind of wormhole that leads to I start crying and never stop. And suddenly I need a therapist. And, you know, like, oh my God, like that is not what happens. Usually what happens is you'll hit upon something and you'll just kind of keep like working on it a little bit, working on it a little bit, working on it a little bit. And you'll start getting a little bit more peace, a little bit more relief, a little bit more understanding. Then eventually it all just kind of fades away. And then it's all just like better. Like when I think about my childhood and stuff now, you know, I used to be so angry, so hurt about all of it. Like, I mean, for a long, like barely could speak to my mom. Like one year we didn't even speak to each other for a whole year. Like there just was so much going on there. And I just spent like a long time, probably a year or two, just not every day, but every time something would come up that was bothering me about my childhood or about my parents or whatever, I would write about it. And I would write about it from little Corinne's point of view, and I would write about it from their point of view. And somewhere in all of that, a lot of healing and understanding came in. I started understanding why I always felt the way I did and why I feel like often not good enough now. And I also understood that when I started thinking about, like, well, why would my parents act that way? And why would they say those things? And blah, 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 blah. And I was doing it from a genuine curiosity. I want to understand it from their point of view, not from mine. Somewhere in the middle became the peace and the relief. It's like, it's okay that you felt this way. But as an adult, I now understand they never meant all that, that's how you translate it. So it started making it easy for me to realize, like, as an adult, I don't have to keep thinking I'm not good enough. And I don't have to keep believing this stuff. I can actually start working on why I might be okay, why I might actually be good at certain things. Like, it just opened the door for that. So the journaling started also allowing for room to think about what I did like about me. And I'm going to tell y'all, without journaling, I never would talk about what was good about me. I was not the kind of person to say those things out loud. And so, unless I journaled and I wrote about, like, here's what went right today, here's what I'm really proud of myself for today, here's where I can see things changing and stuff, unless I was writing about it, I was never thinking about it. It was like there were amazing things happening in my life, and I was missing all of it. Because I always thought I wasn't good enough. So I just was like just not seeing it until journaling. So for a lot of you, journaling can happen in a thousand ways. You can journal first about like just trying to build yourself up. Like if you do our self-love course, if you do our relationships courses and things like that, there's journaling built in to those worksheets. You just will not believe the power that comes from actually writing more and thinking more deliberately about certain things. Most of us, what we do is we experience a lot of pain because we're not thinking about things deliberately. We're thinking about them habitually, the way we've always thought, and the way we've always thought is painful and is hard on us. And so now when we think about it deliberately, we're going to be deliberately looking for compassion, understanding. We're going to be deliberately looking for what we already do that's right. We're going to be deliberately looking for space to feel good about ourselves, find some of the things that we are doing well. I never can speak to y'all enough about journaling. All right. Autumn. Here we go. Hello, Autumn.
Hello.
Hey, what you need help with today?
So, my biggest question is how to deal with jealousy and seeing other people's progress compared to mine.
Okay. So what do you like, give me an example. So you look at, like, if you look in Facebook and you see other people making progress, is that what you're saying?
Yes.
Okay. And your
So,
first thought is what? To make you jealous.
well, my husband, he's an awesome man. He decided to help me out with weight loss, and he's lost a bunch of weight compared to what I've lost. I know women lose slower, you know, and I'm grateful that he's willing to do this with me, but I still feel that I'm competitive by nature. So it's just like, I want to win bigger than anybody else type mentality. So I just
Okay.
don't have the, I need help figuring out how to
Well, let's first and
handle that
foremost make
thought.
sure that feeling jealous is a problem. So you notice that, so we're not talking about the people in our group. You're talking about with your husband. You're jealous
Well,
of your husband's
and
weight
people
loss?
on like Facebook sometimes when I read people's stories and stuff, you know, it bothers me. But yeah, I try to stay away from it because I know it's a trigger for me, and then I tend to eat over it because, oh, I'm never going to get there type mentality, I guess.
Yeah. Okay. So that makes sense. So the first thing we want to do is we want to actually get triggered more often. And then we want to get triggered so we can start handling it better
Yes.
in our mind. So
Yes.
right now, you're making it mean I'm not good enough.
Yes.
So if somebody else is losing weight faster than you, what else could we be thinking? And I don't want it to be good for them. Like, what is something else that you could think? Like, let's use your husband because you live with him and he's the ultimate trigger.
Yes.
So you can ignore Facebook. And I
Yes.
would honestly just tell you the easy way to think about the people in Facebook would just be like, I want to ask them what they're doing that's different than me. I know one thing that they're doing that's different than you. When they see other people's success, they learn from them. They don't eat over it.
Yeah.
So, like, just noticing, like, when they see other people's success, they're like, I want to ask them, like, here's my issue. I tend to eat past enough at dinner. Did you ever have that issue? And what are the things you tried? And what did you tell yourself and stuff? They go immediately into, they probably have an answer that could help me. And so they get excited. And they get motivated and they get like curious, but you're just like, fuck them. Like, I'm not good enough. This is shit. Like, I'm competitive. I should be better than them or I should be a better person. You get mad and jealous and then you're like, where's the Oreos? And you go eat. So we want to get to where we have a different mindset when we see it, not a different reaction, because unless you get a bit different mindset, you'll never have another reaction. Do you understand that?
Yes.
Okay. So let's take your husband. You two are both working on your weight, I gather. Okay. First of all, how do you know he's losing faster?
Well, he's prior military and he
Yeah.
didn't have that much to lose. He's started down 43 pounds. And I'm right there with him, but I just have a lot more to lose. You
Oh, so
know.
he's not losing faster.
He's pretty much maintenance right now, but I still have a ton more to go, you know. I started at 300. I'm at 273 this morning. So, you know, I'm still losing. I'm still doing everything. It's just,
So
it's
why
not
are you mad
fast.
that he's lost his weight and you have to keep going?
Because he looks great and I don't. So it's like, he's looks like an athletic build man, and here I am still plus size, and it's still going to take me probably another year to drop off what I wanted to drop off.
Yeah, but why is that bad?
It's not, it shouldn't be, but it's still a jealousy factor for me. I don't know why. I don't know how to process it to make it stop going in my head like that.
Well, it's not going to stop until we figure out why.
Yeah.
Like, why is it bad that your husband looks athletic and lean? Does he love you?
Oh yeah.
Okay, I just want to make sure because, it's always good to ask. So you got a
Yeah,
man that loves you. So the only person not loving you right now is you.
I think it's more the competitiveness in me. It's just always been a drive for me, just being so competitive. I have to be number one. I have to be the best,
How are
I
you
always
not
try.
number one right now? You had more weight to lose,
Yes.
and he didn't have as much to lose. So would
Yes.
you rather him put his, well, here's one way to fix it. Babe, I need you to put 43 pounds on and do it as fast as you can. And then we need to perfectly sync our weight loss up because I've got a competitive streak and it's bothering me. That's one way to fix it.
Now that kind of sounds stupid now, so hearing it.
Yeah. Well, it's mainly because one of the things that you're trying to put this on is like this is a competition. So you have set yourself up to lose the game. This is not a game. But if you are going to make this a game, you will lose every time. The only thing, like, and I want you to really hear me when I say this, Autumn. He had 43 pounds to lose. He's lost his part. You have more to lose. And if you want to be in competition with yourself. Like, if you want to game it with you. But when you try to game it with someone, that'd be like you trying to be in a competition with me. If let's say I was just like, all right, I'm going to lose 10 pounds. I mean, I just physically can't lose more than 10 pounds at this point. Now, can you imagine if you and I, like, we're doing the weight loss games, Autumn, and whoever loses all their weight first is the winner. Now, would that like, would you be like, well, that's not a fair game? And that's what you're doing to yourself. You're creating some kind of unfair game and then feeling bad about it. But I still haven't figured out why. Like, I don't know if this is a competition thing because it's really easy to see that it's not a competition. Unless you can prove to me it is. Prove to me somehow how this is a competition.
Well, I know that I do very well when you do your birthday month and I strive to give you pounds.
Yeah. Well, why don't
Like,
you just celebrate my birthday every fucking month? Like, as if
well, I
I'm not
do.
going to take your pounds in October versus July.
Well, I'm still giving them to you because I've been on a weight. I haven't gained any this whole summer, so that's really good. I've been constantly losing about 2 to 3 pounds a week, which is really good. I should stick with that, but still, it's just I don't know if it's a
So
drive in me
you're
or something.
winning and giving yourself no credit, basically,
Pretty
is all you're
much,
saying.
yeah, pretty
All
much.
right. Can we just fix that? Like, what is it going to take for you to every single time you're triggered to feel jealousy to say, like, oh, jealousy actually means I'm winning. And here's how I know.
Yeah.
So tell me, how would you know?
It's just a feeling I get. It's just like a hot feeling, like, God damn it. Why are they doing so much better than me? I need
That's
to
the
find,
problem. How are they doing? You're losing 2 to 3 pounds a week. How are they doing better than you? Tell me exactly how someone's doing better than you when you're
Because they're
losing.
already there and in maintenance, and I'm
But
not.
how does that mean they're doing better than me? Why does that not just mean they had less to lose than me, or they got started before me? I just
True.
spit all over my pants. I don't know if y'all saw that, but
Well.
like big drops just fell right out my mouth. But tell me that. Tell me the answer.
Don't know. If I knew the answer, I'd try to work on it better.
That is
We'll
the answer. I just gave it to you. Like you're saying they've already gotten there. So that means they won or they're better than me. Like it's the better than me thing. And I'm like, But how can they be better than you if they started before you, if they had less to lose? That's not equal playing field. You got
I
to explain
understand.
it. You've got to tell me, how is it that someone who's in maintenance, who started before you or had less to weight lose than you, how are they better than you?
I think it strives that I don't think I'll ever get there, maybe. And that sits in that, because they're there, I don't think I can get there, even though I'm trying to get there.
How do you know you can't get there?
Because I've lost tons of weight before, and I'm just keeping it off and getting down to a certain weight and just keeping it off. I've been on every diet there imaginable. I've lost a ton, but I gained it all right back.
Right. And
And
how, like, so I don't want to get too distracted, but how are those di diets different than what you're doing this time?
because I'm trying to work on my brain and my thinking around it.
Yeah. What else?
They weren't maintainable. Is that the word?
Yeah.
Maintainable
Yeah.
for
That's it.
long periods of time.
Yeah. So you did things that weren't a lifestyle, they were a temporary fix.
Yes.
So I want you to think about this. If I was to take a knife and stab you in your femoral artery in your leg, and you were bleeding like a gusher, and I said, I'm gonna put a big, I'm gonna get a belt, I'm gonna tie this off, and I'm giving you a huge band-aid. How long do you think you could survive?
Not very long.
That's what your other diets were. You had a, like, I want you to think about all of you. When you are losing weight on other diets that aren't working on like your relationship with getting triggered and like we've got to solve this. It's like we have to really sit there and tell ourselves, hey, when I am jealous of other people, if that's going to lead to fuck it eating, then I have got to every day write about how well I'm doing because my brain is looking for all kinds of reasons why I might be failing. So now I've got to give it all kinds of reasons why we are not failing. In fact, the people who are in maintenance and no BS especially, that's really good news for me because I'm doing the same thing that they did. They just got a hurt and a fast like a quicker start. They started like years before me or whenever, right? So we have to convince ourselves of that. Otherwise, you will keep fucking eating. And so that will resolve that. So you get to feel better about yourself and cheer yourself on. When you do other diets and you're not working on stuff like that, that is literally like, I have got a major bleed in my leg that's life-threatening. And I'm going to use a belt and a band-aid to solve it. And I'm just going to go about life and hope that that works. And eventually, what happens is the belt wears out, the band-aid is soaked with blood, you start bleeding out again, and like you die. And that's when we regain our weight. But when we do it at no BS, I'm taking you to the emergency room and you are seen by a doctor. Like we are tourniqueting things off at first, but then we're going into surgery and we're fixing the wound. And then you're going to have to rehab. And we're going to sew that sucker up. Like, we're going to do all that so that you can leave the hospital with a working leg and you don't ever have to worry about bleeding out again. That is the difference. Like, I know that's a pretty, like, big, like, I always like to give y'all analogies where you can really picture something, but I want you to think about that. Like, with your other diets, when you're thinking, but I always regained my weight, it was like, yeah, because I had a traumatic injury. And I slapped a fucking band-aid on it. And I wonder why that didn't work. Now I'm not doing that. I'm doing the hard stuff, like sitting around. I'm gonna have to look at my husband and I'm gonna have to remind myself every single time he had less weight to lose than me. That does not mean I'm failing. In fact, every day I'm writing about why I'm not failing. Like, here's the things I did well today. Here's how much weight I'm losing. I am like losing weight actually faster than most people. Most people lose a half a pound to 2 pounds a week. I'm losing 2 to 3 right now. You've got to see a different truth, but that's going to take slowing down. That means you're going to have to get triggered. That's why I was saying, I want you triggered with your jealousy, because if every time you're triggered with jealousy, you are now pivoting to, and here's what I'm going to purposely believe, and here's what's actually real, and here's what's really true. It is very true that I'm losing 2 to 3 pounds. It is very true that most people who are in maintenance started losing weight before me. It's also true that many of them didn't have as much weight to lose as I did, just like my husband. It's also true that I'm doing this a very different way than I have in the past. Like, you have to give yourself these truths. Otherwise, your jealousy will feel very true. What do you think?
I'm just writing a note real fast.
Oh, you're good. No, you're good.
Okay. Yeah. A lot to work on.
Yeah, and this is the thing. It is like 5 minutes of writing every morning. Like, when we say it's a lot to work on, it's like, actually, it's like 5 minutes. 5 minutes a day to remind myself of this. And then when I get triggered, I'll know what to think. And if that's the biggest issue you have right now, is I get triggered and I get jealous and I don't like how that feels, and sometimes it's even causing me to fuck at eating, this is the best place to start.
Okay.
And then all you got to, like, the rest of the day is just notice when you're jealous, remind yourself of what you're writing about. That's literally it.
Okay.
Okay. I bet you feel different. If you will do this for 30 days, I bet you will feel completely different at the end of 30 days.
Hope so.
I'm pretty sure you will, but you got to do it for like 30 days. Like, every day, I want you to write about, here's what I'm doing right. Here's what's working. Here's why this is different this time. Give yourself the gift of calming down your fears. Because at the heart of it, you're just worried you're not going to be able to keep your weight off. And so, your brain, when it's worried about something, it wants to think about it. And I want you to think about it on purpose on paper so that you get to feel better rather than letting it just think about it in the background, freaking out, looking around to see who's lost weight and you haven't, and like overreacting and then sending you to eat. Like, it's thinking about it in one way or the other. Paper thinking is the way that we think about it to where we can lose weight. Letting it just fester in our brain, you're just left to your devices.
Okay.
All right. Thank you.
I'll work on that. Thank you.
Alrighty. All right, everyone. That is it for today. We don't have anybody else's hands raised, so we're just gonna call it here. We're gonna put a lid on it, and then I will be back at 12:30 for Queen's Club. And I would love to have you come. That is an open call for all the people who've lost at least 25 pounds to get coached. Anybody can attend the call. We always put them in the replays for everyone. But if you were in Queen's Club and you want to get coached today, please come to that call, and I will be right there with you. All right. Bye, y'all.